the whole day goes, it's, you know, mundane stuff.
You get up early in the morning and then you're busy all day and then you go to bed at night. And how do you become Krishna conscious? Well, start in the morning. The morning is actually the best time for spiritual activity. It's calm, it's peaceful. It's just, it's actually meant for spiritual cultivation. That time of day is perfect for that. So start in the morning, chant Hare Krishna. Read something from Bhagavad Gita or spiritual literature. And you'll get the inspiration and the focus by which to carry out your activities in such a way that you'll remember Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's telling Arjuna, Mam Manusmara Yudhyacha, think of me and fight. Because he was a military man. So don't just fight, think of me and fight. So I may be a businessman, I may be a doctor, lawyer. So I have to perform my work and manage my life in such a way that while working, I'll think of Krishna. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. I've come from Calgary, Canada, and my question to you is, when we die, what's the best way of... first, question number one, if we have Krishna in our mind when we are taking our last breath, do we attain Godhead? And secondly, how to do that?
That the question concerns what happens when we die. And according to the Bhagavad Gita, whatever you think of at the time of death, that determines your next lifetime. And therefore, one should think of Krishna, the Supreme, then that's where you'll go. And then the question is how to do that. That's the work of the rest of our life. Because it's not just that all of a sudden at the end, I'll think of the Supreme, I'll think of Krishna, and my life will be perfect. I have to cultivate that consciousness throughout my life. So that's this Krishna consciousness movement, by chanting, by associating with those who are also focused on Krishna, by reading the books, by taking food offered to Krishna. In so many ways, by cultivating consciousness of Krishna in this lifetime, when your lifetime ends, you'll think of Krishna.
I want to donate my body for my research purpose, like my lungs, my heart, and my complete body. I don't want any cremation for my body, as per Hindu and the Gita says. And if I donate my complete body for, say, my liver can be used, my heart can be used for somebody, and my complete body is used, and there is no cremation for my body, and no religious function is being celebrated after my death, no religious celebration is being celebrated after my death, because I don't have any body, no cremation, nothing else. So, is it will affect to my next birth or no?
If we donate our organs for scientific research, and therefore there's no cremation ceremony, no funeral ceremony, does it affect our next destination? The more important thing is what our consciousness is focused on. Because the body is going to be finished. Either we're going to donate it to the fire, or we're going to donate it to the earth, in which case whoever's living underneath the ground, the little bugs and things, they're going to get it. Or the Zoroastrians, they donate it to the vultures. So one way or another, your body's getting donated. Or you donate the parts to science. One way or another, we have to leave this body behind. So the question is, where is my consciousness? If my consciousness is focused on this world and on science and on the people who are going to get the body parts and so on, then I have to come back to this material world because that's where my consciousness is. And if my consciousness is focused on Krishna, then I go to Krishna. Is that all right?
Prabhuji, my second question is, in our daily life, like, I don't want to become a sannyasi like you, or I don't want to leave my, I have been born in a family, and I was more, Krishna didn't give me a Brahman birth and all that. I want to do my daily rituals, like, I have an MBA, I want to rise high in the corporate sector, I want to be able to, so I don't want to miss my my life, my career and everything, but at the same time I want to be very close to Krishna. Is it possible? I want to do my, like, from what I, my understanding of Gita is, like, you should do your duty and forbid the fruit of the action. So my duty right now, in from the past couple of months, I just do my duty and I don't worry about the result, like, and that's what I follow. I follow Gita in that aspect. Is that good enough for living a good life or a good karmic life?
You're doing your duty and you're indifferent to the result. You forsaken the result. Where does the result go? Forsaken the result means I'm working. You're an MBA, so you're working in the financial sector, corporate sector, sector. So you're getting some money. That's the result of your work. Now, what are you going to do with that result? You can keep it for yourself and spend it for your enjoyment. That's one thing. You can say, this is my money and I'm going to enjoy it. Or you can forsake it. You say, this money is just illusion. I'm giving it up. But if you're keeping it for yourself, you're a thief. Because it's not your property. You may think it's my property, but it's only your property because you've got your hands on it now. And then it goes someplace else. It's not actually yours. But if you give it up, then you're a fool. Like a person who finds a wallet with $100. If he thinks this is my wallet, he's a thief. And if he just leaves it there, he's a fool. What should he do? He has to find out who's the real owner of the wallet and give it to that person. So the real owner of everything is Krishna. Therefore, everything should be given to Krishna.
My basic, if the day I die, the assets I have, I know what I'm going to do with that. I've already made my mind on that. But what my question was, I don't want to forsake my daily life. I don't want to become a sannyasi or a pandit or something, or go to a temple. I pray in the morning for 5 to 10 minutes and I have deep meditation, that's it. And I pray to Krishna to be always be with me in all my endeavors and everything. So is that a good way of reaching Godhead? Like, I'm doing my karma and I'm born in a family and I'm doing a job, I'm doing everything to the best of my ability, forsaking the result of my action. Is that good enough?
You're forsaking the result of the action? You mean you're working for no pay?
What I mean by result is, supposing I go to do my job, I'm not worried if I get promoted or what will happen to my job. I don't worry about that. I do my best and I get rewarded for that, of course, and if I get an award, I'm very happy for attaining that award, but I don't chase them. I just do my karma, and I if I get promoted, if I get some raise or something, I'm very happy, but I don't...
Raise just means you get paid more, but one way or another, you're getting paid. And you're not forsaking the pay.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I I know when I die, if I have
to. When you die, you definitely you'll forsake your pay. That we understand.
I know what I do with my assets and everything.
That's, I'll keep them, as long as I live, I'll hold on to everything. And when I die, I'll renounce everything. That's not exactly what Krishna is teaching. The result of my work is my pay. In practical terms, I'm working, and the result of the work comes at the end of the week. Now, I'm not forsaking the result of that work. I'm not saying, no, anyway, I love your company, so you just keep it. That means you're not a fool. But you're keeping it for yourself. That means you're a thief. Because it's actually Krishna's property. And you're using it for yourself. So you're a paka thief.
Actually, this body that I have is also Krishna's property. He has just given me this body to reside in this body, to stay in some time and do my karma. This body is not mine. I'm here. I'm paying the rent of devotion and faith. My body, I'm not this body. I'm inside here and I'm doing my karma. I'm doing my duty and everything.
Your body belongs to Krishna, so you're going to make sure that the body is very well taken care of, and that's your service to Krishna. So 10 minutes prayers in the morning, then 8 hours working so that the body will be taken care of very nicely. That's not your duty. In the Bhagavatam it said, kamasya nendriya pritir labha jiveta yavata. One should not spend his energy for satisfying the demands of the body. One should take jivasya tattva jigyasa. One should take only what one needs as bare necessities. And one's real business is tattva jigyasa, to inquire about the Supreme and how to serve the Supreme. That's his real business. That's our real duty. Simply working, doing karma means work. So simply doing karma, doing work, is not the perfection of life. Otherwise, the ass would be a great spiritually advanced being, because he's working. Huh? And he also doesn't care if I get a raise, I don't get a raise. As long as I get a little something at the end of the day, I'll work all day. So simply working is not our duty. Our duty is to revive our relationship with Krishna. Our duty is to revive our relationship. That's the purpose of the human form of life. Working you can do in any form of life. The ass can work. But the human being has higher intelligence. Why should he be using that higher intelligence just for working? Because someone pays him. The ass is working with his back. We're working with our brain. But it's for the same purpose, to eat nicely, to have a place to live.
I apologize from everybody. I'm asking all the questions. I'm sorry about that. I just want some clarification. What I do is, I offer it to Krishna. Like, whatever I do, I see that it's morally right, it's lawfully right, it's not wrong, and I pray to Krishna to be with me all the time.
But it's your program. You buy yourself a new car and you offer it to Krishna. You buy yourself a new VCR and you offer it to Krishna. You buy yourself a movie ticket and you offer it to Krishna. That's not offering to Krishna. If you really want to offer to Krishna, then you should do something that serves Krishna's purpose, not your purpose. Just like we have these books, Bhagavad Gita. So this book costs some money to print, and people will get the book and get enlightened. So some of your hard-earned money, if you spend it for spreading Krishna's message, now you're giving to Krishna. Not just that I give to myself and then I put a little rubber stamp on it, I offer this to Krishna.
and then I use it for my own enjoyment. But Krishna has some purpose. People should get this knowledge. People should get free from material existence. And by Krishna's grace, you have a good brain, you have a good job, you're getting good money. Now use that money for Krishna. Some money you keep for your own maintenance, because as you said, your body is given by Krishna, so you have to maintain it. But if you're an MBA, you're getting paid more than enough to keep body and soul together. So you spend it for Krishna. That's the idea.
Hare Krishna.
Recently, I just visited doctor. My family has some heart-related problems, and he suggested me to use either medicine like aspirin because of my family history, or if you don't want to start using any medication, just use red wine like as a medicine. So, but from Krishna consciousness, this intoxication is one of the obstacle. So I'm just thinking, what is the solution for this? So which is right, like to have as a medicated red wine is good, or to take a medicine aspirin because of to avoid future my family history heart problems?
There's no problem with aspirin. Yeah, take aspirin. If you become an aspirin addict, that's not a big problem. If you become a wine addict, that's a big problem. I understand, but aspirin also. I mean, it's not that you're taking aspirin and, you know, going into the stratosphere with aspirin. You're taking your aspirin because you, as a medicine. The medicine is all right. All right. Aspirin's cheap. It's cheap. Everything, wine has side effects also. Everything has a side effect. Whether it's wine, whether it's aspirin, whether it's water, everything has a side effect. So the wine is not very much. Of course, even for medical purpose, you can take anything. But medical purpose, you can take anything. But we recommend aspirin. You know, since I was 5, they've been recommending aspirin. Still, we recommend aspirin. Whatever you take, chant Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, Prabhupada instructed his devotee to have a 16 round and do the deity worship at home also, and read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, if somebody does more round of Hare Krishna mantra instead of 16, increasing, and if he doesn't read Shastras, no, Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, what is the priority? Somebody can, instead of 16 rounds, say 25 rounds, and he may not have time to read Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. What you suggest is the priority?
There's chanting Hare Krishna, there's reading spiritual books, there's serving Krishna in different ways. So exactly what proportion you do, that's an individual case. Someone chants more, someone reads more, someone serves more. That's an individual matter, according to his personal taste or according to the directions of the spiritual master. But even the person who's chanting more, he can read a little bit. Every day read something. Some are more inclined to the philosophy, some are more inclined to chanting. But if we keep up chanting every day, reading every day, that'll be good. Another question? Yeah.
Hare Krishna. How do we become equally situated in happiness and distress?
How do you become equally happy, situated in happiness and distress? One becomes equally situated by knowing, I'm not this body. Happiness and distress means what? Something for this body, or something for the mind. But if I'm not this body, not the mind, then the happiness and distress of the body and mind are not the issue. If I know that I'm the spiritual being within the body, the spiritual being is by nature happy. He's constitutionally happy. So when I identify myself as the spirit soul within the body, then what's happening in terms of happiness and distress externally is not much of an issue. Is that okay? Yeah. Another question?
There's a question.
Hare Krishna. I've read in, you know, the Gita that when we transcend our material existence and go return to Godhead, I just wonder, I mean, what is that like? What does that feel like? I just want to understand more about that.
When we transcend our material existence and go back to Godhead, what is that like? There are two senses in which one may go back to Godhead. During this life and at the end of life. But during this life, you go back to Godhead by being connected with Godhead. By being connected with Krishna. That you can do in this very life. And what is that like? That you'll experience yourself. The first installment is that one gets happiness by chanting Hare Krishna, by coming in touch with Krishna. And another thing that happens is I become less concerned with so-called material happiness, because I'm getting a higher happiness. Just like when you eat, then you feel satisfaction and you don't feel like eating anymore. But when you come in touch with Krishna, become connected with Krishna, go back to Krishna, in this life you'll feel satisfaction, you'll feel happiness. And the Bhagavad Gita says you'll experience it yourself. No one will have to give you a certificate. Directly you'll see. Then the same thing, actually, in this life, you'll feel that I'm connected with Krishna. You'll feel the happiness that comes from being engaged in Krishna's service. Then the next life, you simply continue. It's like step by step. You get a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. What is that experience? What is that dedication? What is that connection with Krishna? And then at the end of life, instead of coming back to this material world for some material thing, you weren't concerned about that. You were concerned with Krishna, so you continue. You go back to Krishna. Is that okay?
Question back here. Do you have a question?
Sure, but if someone else
was. Is this a follow-up?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. My question is, worldly life.
Pardon? Hold it close to the mic, close to your mouth.
Okay. My question is relating to worldly life. In daily life, you are most of the time happy, but sometimes the situation arises. Somebody said something which you didn't like, or something or the other, and it has a reaction on your mind. It should not happen. You should be happy. Whatever it comes, you take it as it is. In philosophy, I know it, and it should be like that. But as a human being, it doesn't work. You feel upset. How to get rid of it? Thank you.
in our ordinary life, we sometimes feel some happiness, or we sometimes feel pinched. Someone says something to us and we become upset, and we know that we shouldn't be upset, but we are upset anyway. So what to do? Huh? That's the question. But therefore, this chanting is recommended. This chanting is recommended. Because the mind is now absorbed in, oh, he said this to me, or they did that to me, or I could get this, I could get... Instead, you think of Krishna, and the mind is engaged in that superior consciousness. So it's practical. It's not just silent meditation or wishful thinking or trying to tell myself I shouldn't be affected by this or that. But by chanting Hare Krishna, your mind becomes absorbed in Krishna, and then what do you care? It becomes petty. So what? They said this, they did that, I got this, I didn't get that. When I have Krishna, what do I care about that? You see, I have the superior thing. You gave me a big feast, what do I care if they stole my cookie?
Hare Krishna. It's a similar question to what Chelsea asked, and my question would be, you know, one day when I return back to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what would it be like? Do you have any conceptual idea of what it's like to spend eternity with Krishna? Is it pure light? Is there streets? Are there, you know, silver cities in the clouds? Or what's it like to be in Krishna Loka? Hare Krishna.
The description is there in Vedic literature, where Krishna's living, what it's like, what they're doing, what the experience is like. All of these things are described. Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study, just as there's Krishna's abode. But when you read Srimad Bhagavatam, you find out all the details. What's going on there, who's there, what kinds of exchanges. The basic principle of the spiritual world is loving exchanges. Exchanges. Just like here in this material world, the basic principle is some sort of exchange of service. I'm serving my boss, or I'm serving my country, or I'm serving my friends. The friends are serving the friends, or the parent is serving the children, or in the relationship between a husband and wife, or lover and beloved, there's an exchange of service. And the service, we hope, will be with love. You know, I serve because you pay me. Okay, that's service, but it's not very satisfying service. When I love to serve, then it's more satisfying. The love between the parent and the child is a source of some satisfaction. Or the love between husband and wife, or boyfriend and girlfriend. So in the spiritual world, the whole program is exchanges of love between you and Krishna, between the living being and Krishna, in these relationships. To someone who's as master and servant, someone's friend and friend, or parent and child, or lover and beloved. The same relationships that we find here are there, but here they're limited. The mother loves the son, but the son leaves home and goes to another part of the world, and mother's in another part of the world. Or the lover and beloved, they have such a deep relationship, but then he becomes attracted to someone else, or she becomes attracted to someone else, or something happens, or finally someone dies. So the relationships here are never perfect. But in the spiritual world, those relationships are perfect. They're eternal, they never
stop. They never quit. And they're not materially motivated. Here, you know, I say that I love you, but really it's, you just got a tremendous inheritance, and so I love you very much, or whatever it is. It's never selfless. There's always something, what am I going to get out of it? And when I'll get something from it, and you get something from it, then we're friends, or then we're business associates, or what have you. But in the spiritual world, it's completely out of love. And therefore, there's complete satisfaction.
Just as an extension of what this devotee has said, is it right to say service to mankind is service to Krishna? Service to mankind is service to Krishna?
Is service to mankind service to Krishna? Is service to the leaf service to the plant? The plant needs water. When I water the leaf, am I watering the plant? Not really. The plant has so many leaves, and if I think I'll water all of these leaves and then the plant will be very nicely watered, it doesn't work. You plant the water on the root, you pour the water on the root, then all the leaves, branches, the whole plant thrives. So Krishna is the root of everything. When you serve Krishna, then you're serving all living beings. But if you try to serve all living beings, how many can you serve and how well can you serve them?
Then my next question is, how do you serve Krishna? By going to temples, by chanting his name, and like, is that, I used to chant Krishna's name all the time, like Hare Rama, Hare Krishna. I used to believe in Sai Baba, you know, like my spiritual guru. And I used to take his name all the time, 24 hours, 24/7. And I didn't do that anymore, but you know, I used to chant his name again and over and over and over and over and over and over again till I became like doing my job and forsaking my karmas and all that. So like, is it chanting name sufficient? Like if I chant his name morning to evening, I always observe him in my deeds, in my action, in my whatever I do, I just think of Krishna. Is that good enough to think of Krishna, like the service to Krishna?
It has to be something practical. It's not that I'll sit in a room someplace all day and I'll simply chant Krishna, Krishna. Maybe some rare saints will just do that, but we're not going to do that. You and I are not going to do that. But there has to be a practical program by which I serve Krishna, by which I think of Krishna, by which I'm connected with Krishna. It can't be something sentimental or fanatical. Therefore, we need proper guidance. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is giving us practical guidance how to serve him, and the bona fide spiritual master is the person who teaches us how to follow what Krishna is saying. So by hearing from Krishna and hearing from the bona fide spiritual master, spiritual teacher, we'll get a practical program, not something impractical. Krishna is not teaching Arjuna something that can't work. Why waste time? He's teaching something practical. But if people don't get the right guidance, then they don't know what to do. And then they try something and it doesn't work. They try something else, it doesn't work. Because it's something made up, something, you know, imagined.
Do you have any tips on meditation?
Any tips on meditation? Chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's meditation. Meditation means to focus the mind on one point. What is that one point? Not just a candle or a light, but the Supreme. That's real meditation. So Krishna is the Supreme. You chant Hare Krishna and your mind will be fixed on Krishna. Simple thing. Not very complicated, not
roundabout, not impractical. You could try silent meditation, but it's very difficult because the mind wanders like mad. But chanting is practical, it's easy. You go on chanting, and go on hearing while you're chanting. It's not sort of offhand chanting, but you're chanting with concentration. That's the best meditation. Some other question? Is it? No, not yet. Another question. I wonder what other questions might be bubbling up out there.
I'm here with my son for the first time in Los Angeles, and he wanted to come to the festival. We are just now, as parents of my son, we are trying to learn the principles and everything being in the Krishna movement. But if we don't understand, when it comes to me preparing food for my son, I don't understand the onion and the garlic difference. I just want to feed him and provide him nourishment, but I get stuck with, I don't understand why you can't eat this, you know. So could you explain that to me?
So your son's become a Hare Krishna devotee? And you'd like to understand what more about what he's doing? And especially about why can't he eat this, why can't he eat that? Especially why no meat? You understand that. So why no onions? Why no garlic? Okay. Basically, our diet is what we offer to Krishna. If Krishna were a garlic eater, we'd offer garlic to Krishna. But you know, Krishna dances with the gopis, his sweethearts in Vrindavan, and with garlic and onions on his breath, it doesn't go very well. Yeah, a lot of food is already prepared that way. What we get at restaurants or by... So that... Yeah, frozen food. That's why we usually don't eat frozen foods. It's, you know, when it's kind of like society has changed. Back in the old days, nobody ate frozen foods. You get picked fresh vegetables and fresh things and then cook them and offer them to God. And then we take. Now, you know, we go to the supermarket and we get something that's wrapped in something and we microwave it, and that's kind of it. And a lot is lost there. You know, we lose a lot. When we prepare something ourselves with devotion, then that comes through in the food. Otherwise, when we're preparing it so that the consumers will keep the corporation going, and the shareholders, the stockholders, will be pleased with their earnings. It's not the same. So we try to prepare everything, you know, fresh, and offer to Krishna. And then that same food we take. If you do it that way, you'll see how the quality of your life changes. You'll eat better. And you'll think of Krishna.
Hare Krishna, I have two questions. Number one, so is it possible to go back to Krishna in this one lifetime by chanting his names?
Is it possible to go back to Krishna in this one lifetime by chanting his names, by chanting Hare Krishna? Definitely. 100%. Krishna says, you think of me, you come back to me. You can do that in this very life. And you had a second question.
And so what if it is not possible for us to get initiated by a spiritual master? So what can we do then? Do we read the scriptures or what else? What else do we do?
Not possible means what?
Like not practical to get a spiritual master.
Why not practical?
Because we are too busy in the school or work or something like that.
To be busy in school or work is not a disqualification. It's not that unless I quit work or quit school and spend all of my time sitting in an ashram, I can't be guided or initiated by a spiritual master. Spiritual master means teacher. So when someone is serious to learn the principles of Krishna consciousness from a qualified teacher, and he's willing to follow the instructions of the teacher, then he can be initiated. Not that you have to quit school or quit work or quit this or quit that. Okay.
I have a couple questions. First question is, my understanding is that when you die, and if you're thinking of Krishna when you die, you will go back to be a Krishna. Am I right? If you're not thinking about Krishna when you die, and you say you spend your whole life chanting rounds, and you just so happen when you die suddenly, you're not thinking about it, what will happen?
So you chant Hare Krishna, and then you die, and you go to Krishna. Or you chant Hare Krishna all during your life, you're chanting, but somehow at the time of death, you forget, or you're distracted, or suddenly comes, and you don't think of Krishna, what happens? Okay. Two things. One is that because you've been chanting throughout your life, it may just so happen that Krishna will help you to think of him. Even though you weren't focused on it, he's focused on it because you were focused throughout your whole life. Possibility one. Possibility two, okay, you don't make it. You know, you got 80% of the way there, let's say, but you didn't get 100% of the way. In the material world, it means next time you start from zero. You know, you built up a business and then you die. It's not that you come back in your next life and, you know, you have all your assets. You just go back to the bank and say, I was that guy in the previous life and I had, you know, $80,000 in the bank and I want to get started again. It's just wiped out. But whatever spiritual credit you got in this life, you start with in your next life. It's not, you know, make it or break it, one time, win or lose, and that's it. If you made 80% progress, your next life you start from 81. Then let's say you make it to 98. Okay, you still didn't make it, but now you just have 2% of the way left. Knock it off in the next lifetime. So Krishna says there's never any loss. There's never any loss. However, whatever progress you make, that's yours. But the best thing is, finish it up in this life. Is that okay?
Sometimes we feel that at some point in our life we were doing a lot of, you know, good sadhana and remembering Krishna very well, and then another point of our life we fall away, we're not so interested. And so how can it be that whatever progress we made we still have, if we see that there are people sometimes who say, you know, who feel like, oh, I used to be a Hare Krishna devotee, but that's not for me anymore, or something like that. If you meet some, I know it's rare, but if you meet some people like that, how can we say that whatever progress they made is still with them?
It's there, but it's covered. And therefore we see someone leaves, but then his spiritual consciousness revives. There's an example of the king, Paradmaraj, you know the example. He was practicing spiritual progress, meditation, but at the time of death, somehow or other, he'd become attracted to a little deer. The deer had taken shelter of him and he took care of the deer. And at the time of death, he thought of the deer. That means it was a step back for him. He was making progress toward the Supreme and he got sidetracked to thinking of the deer. So at the time of death, he thought of the deer, and the next life he became a deer. But because of his spiritual progress, in the life of a deer, he remembered, this is what happens. And so he found out where there were sages, where there were spiritually advanced people, and the deer would hang out with them. He would stay close to them. So he revived his spiritual consciousness. And then the next life, he became a saintly person, and he finished the job. So it may sometimes be covered or eclipsed for some time, but it's never lost. Krishna says that spiritual progress is never lost.
Actually, I got many questions, but slaughterhouses is one of the great evils in this world. What do you think would happen if let's just say that all the slaughterhouses shut down and there was no more slaughtering animals? Do you think there might be like an overpopulation of animals on Earth? What do you think would happen?
If all the slaughterhouses were closed, would there be the world be overrun with animals? No. Because this industry is breeding animals at a crazy pace just to kill them. Otherwise, let's take the state of California. Oh, turn back the clock, say, 500 years. Was California overrun with animals? No, there were no slaughterhouses, but it's not that without the slaughterhouse industry to keep the animals in check, California would be overrun with animals. The big problem is that California now is overrun with people who are killing animals, who are killing so many aspects of the environment with an unnatural way of life. The animals aren't a problem. We're the problem. The animals always act like animals. They do just what they're supposed to do. The birds always sing and they always eat what birds are supposed to eat. Cows eat what cows are supposed to eat. And human beings eat everything. You leave a little grain, the bird will come and peck and take as much as it needs. And you leave a sack of grain, the man will take the whole sack. Well, the problem is not the animals, the problem is us. No use complaining about them, it's us. It's not that without us, there'd be a problem. We are the problem. And the problem is that we've developed an overcomplicated way of life based on overexploitation of others, other human beings, other animals, other resources of the world, of the earth. And therefore, we're making life more difficult for others and more difficult for ourselves. And we're forgetting our real purpose of life, which is to develop our spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Okay? Is there another question bubbling up there someplace? Yes.
Hare Krishna. There's this quantum theory called entanglement, that at the birth of the Big Bang, everything was one, everything was interconnected. So, with the causation of reincarnation, could this mean that we don't necessarily take another life on this planet, that we may take a birth and upteen billions of other options of planetary systems and upteen billions of cosmos, galaxies? Or is it confirmed that we stay on this planet and we either degrade or upgrade? Hare Krishna.
Well, I'm not quite sure about how the second part of your question, whether we're limited to taking birth on this planet or we may take birth on other planets. I'm not quite sure how that connects with the physical principle of entanglement, but I'll
maybe I'll answer the second part and let you figure out the first part. According to Bhagavad Gita, we may take birth on many different planets. There are higher planets, planets of demigods. There are lower planets, just as on this planet, you know, there are higher and lower places. You could take birth in Beverly Hills, or you could take birth in Senegal or someplace. You know, there's higher and lower standards of living, higher and lower places. So the whole universe is like that. It's full of different higher and lower planets with different varieties where living beings can take birth. Maybe you can connect that for yourself with physics and entanglement, or do you want to still clarify that?
It says that
information. Here, hold on a second. I'm giving you the microphone.
It said that if you were to splice an electron, keep one half of it, and send the other one to the nethermost region of the cosmos, what you do to that spliced electron instantaneously affects the other half of it. So hence the entanglement of either information travels infinitely fast, faster than the speed of light, or it's all interconnected, it's all one. And so I've often wondered, you know, I see so many ants everywhere, and, you know, all these creatures, there's a plethora of them everywhere, and I often think, you know, were they humans before? You know, what was their karma for them to take such a small, minute birth? Even though ecologically we need them, they're so profound in their job. So I was just wondering if, you know, because I do believe in life all over the universe. I think it's pretty much a known fact for myself. And so spiritually, with the Gita, I just wanted the confirmation on, are we limited to just Earth, or... And as you just said, Hare Krishna, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Hare Krishna, thank you for clarifying that question a little bit. Ultimately, everything is interconnected because everything's connected with Krishna. Everything is one in the sense that everything is part of Krishna. And everything has a connection with Krishna. For a more in-depth discussion of entanglement and Krishna consciousness in terms of physics, I'd have to pass you on to one of our physicists.
I'm
less than not a physicist, but we have some members who are physicists and who are working precisely in regard to questions like entanglement and collapse of the wave function and all of that sort of stuff. So I could put you in touch with such people if you really wanted to go there. Okay, good enough. Thank you very much. We have time for another question.
Can you explain to me what is the material energy? I see devotees say, oh, well, he's in Maya, or he's under the influence of the material energy. Can you explain that, please?
What does it mean? What is the material energy? And what does it mean to be under the influence of Maya or material energy? Yeah. Material energy, you can understand what material energy is by thinking about yourself. You're a conscious person. You have thoughts. You have feelings. You have will or desire. And you're in a body. The body is material. It's made of, it's a contraption. It's a machine. You've got bones. You've got blood flowing through your veins. You've got a pump in there that's pumping the blood. You have another set of pumps that are pumping the air.
you have all these physical systems which are kind of moving chemicals around and moving ingredients around and transforming them this way and that way. So it's a wonderful machine. But it's a machine. But there are two things. There's yourself and there's your body. There's the machine and there's the person who's in the machine, or like a car. There's the car and the person within the car. So both the person and the machine are energies of God. Just as heat and light are energies of fire. So matter, of which the body is made, and spirit, of which the very self is made, are both energies of God. They're both coming from God. But the self or spirit is called the spiritual energy or superior energy. And the body and material things are called the material energy. But when we're focused on, when we're in tune with our spiritual identity, who we are, when we know that we're not the body, that we're the soul, when we know that the soul is connected with the Supreme, then we're in spiritual consciousness. And when we forget our spiritual nature and become preoccupied with the body and the things connected with the body and other bodies, then we're under the influence of the material energy, the mind. So thank you very much for your question so far. Now I'm switching places with Vaisheshika Prabhu, I think, right? No? Who am I switching places with? 3 o'clock. Okay, when someone comes and tells me they're switching places with me, that's what's happening. But meanwhile, perhaps there's another question here.
Yes, sometimes I feel the donating to charity, donating to charities. So I'm just wondering, what is the stand on ISKCON movement about charities? Like, for example, I have some $10, $100 with me, and there is some calamity happened, and you have option either to give to charity where the humanity works, or you want to donate for Krishna consciousness development. So in between these two, what is the best option to decide?
You're asking about charity, because we may want to give charity for helping people who are victims of natural disasters or whatever, or we may want to give something for Krishna consciousness. And Krishna says there are different kinds of charity. There's charity in the mode of ignorance, charity in the mode of passion, charity in the mode of goodness, transcendental charity. Yes, charity is basically, so charity which is selfless is in goodness. When I'm performing charity with the idea of getting something, that's in passion. But sometimes even selfless charity is in ignorance. I give to some charity, but they're using that money for something which is sinful, harmful. Then I've given for some harmful cause. But even though I'm acting selflessly, I'm acting ignorantly. And that's not very good. But the highest charity, someone says, well, just giving charity for spiritual purposes, that's kind of ignoring what people really need. No, the biggest calamity is that we're in this material world. There's no greater calamity than that. That's the mother of all calamities. If I'm in a tsunami, or I'm in an earthquake, or I'm in a war zone, or whatever it is, why? It's because I'm in this material world where I don't belong in the first place. And the real solution is to get out of this material world. As long as the material world is here, calamities will be here. However much charity you give, $100 billion in charity, You won't wipe out war, you won't wipe out famine, you won't wipe out earthquakes or suffering. By the laws of karma, it must be there. But if you can enlighten a person so that he gets out of the material world, you're doing the greatest charity. Therefore, that's best. Okay. And who's speaking next? Bugging. So charitable. Okay. So you're fortunate that I'm going to be replaced by my godbrother, Charudas, who's one of the senior disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He's a very capable person, expert manager, expert in advisor, in personal advice. He himself has started a Hare Krishna center in near Salt Lake City in Utah, and he and his wife do wonderful festivals there. I was just hearing about the latest festival, 10,000 people in the morning and 15,000 people in the evening attended this Hare Krishna festival in the middle of Mormon country and enjoyed it. And even the Mormon people recognized his activities as being so worthwhile that they themselves help. Even the Mormon elders take part in his programs. He's a very capable devotee, very expert devotee, very qualified to answer your questions. And where is he? Just coming, I guess.
Give a big hand for His Holiness
Jagvedaswami. Thank you. And Charu Prabhu, just to not to embarrass you, I said all these good things about you before you came. But only a few, because there's not many of them.
Yavid Maharaj?
Yes.
Questions?